Well, I turned off that one. That really wasn't my intention. Pardon me. So this is the same trip, continuing on the last one, where I was talking about mushes and muds and moods. There was a mood too. It was object oriented, which is not a bad motif for this stuff. Since most things in a mush, for instance, are based on objects, it really makes a lot of sense. Do kind of object orientation. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if both object-oriented programming began with these MUDs, because it's very a really good way to think about everything. There's rooms, and these are abstractions too. And portals between them. So you'd have rooms, and you'd have connectors between the rooms. You would you'd have containers that you'd put into rooms. Items. Now you could just leave an item out in the room if you wanted to. And they would have various properties in common. Well, you could create new objects based on the old ones that had different properties. Like a room would be lit or unlit. Various properties to it. Was it underwater? Kind of a hard floor, soft floor, and based upon those attributes, parameters, properties. Different things could happen. If you stayed in a room too long, and the floor was soft, but there was a certain amount of time that you were supposed to stay in that room. If you didn't get out of that room fast enough, you could sink into the floor and be taken someplace else. It ended up being kind of a passageway to another place. Which you wouldn't initially know about. Unless you stayed in there. And based on time and on the fact that the floor was soft, any particular point, something could happen. Like it could say, "Boy, this floor is squishy," and then a few minutes later, or a few, like a minute later, could say, "Golly, this floor is really squishy." And then it'd be like, "This floor is so soft I can't even see my shoes." Little trail of hints to the fact that something could happen here. And then all of a sudden it could say, "Oh, you got swallowed up and now you're in, you know, the stomach of the room monster." But inside the stomach of the room monster, you've got all kinds of interesting treasures that you would need to do other things. So approach each individual must like a whole bunch of quests that need to get solved. You might say, "Oh, this is this game or this is that game." Much more graphically oriented. Something that a mere individual person could never really pull together. Because of it takes teams of people to make these graphic adventures work, and it needs a good really can't do it as a hobby. Well, I guess you could, but it would take you decades to do it, which I don't have anymore. I have a few decades, but not as many as in the past already. Anyway, but as it's text-based, eminently doable. And the great thing is you can run it on your own server, like I do at home, have thousands of players. You can serve from one server. It's not necessary anymore. These kinds of mushes and muds don't attract that many people. You'd be lucky if you have a few dozen. At any one time. People come to sightsee just to kind of do the easy stuff. They've got all kinds of things. You can message each other. You people that are playing the game, that are in the game world. And, people can engage with it on any level they like. A lot of mushes and muxes are I lost my train of thought. Oh my gosh. They're made mostly for world building. A lot of people in them will spend, on a certain level, the whole part of a mush is to gain the capability to create things. Sometimes very free form. And the things that the creator puts into it are really just kind of window dressing. For what the individual characters, and the characters are objects too. They have an inventory of things that they're carrying. They're kind of a container. People try to build up their character to be able to do more and more things. Cast spells, stuff like that. But all these things came from more of a fantasy background. So you get kind of that feel. Programmed into them very deeply. Of course, the Vigiri allegory doesn't behave like that at all. Like this world, tried to pattern God in the Vigiri after the God of this world. Everything's set up, everything has a useful purpose. Kind of a game of life aspect to it. I don't know how things like family would fit into it. OK. kind of ends up being like a non-player character, an NPC. People talk about that. It's like, yeah, those are programmatic elements. They aren't being run by a person. And, you know, you say, okay, well, you get married to an NPC, and you go, oh, well, that isn't optimal. Better to have another player as your mate, whether you're going on adventures together or not. Both share in the combined doings. That's what we're going to be working on. I remember this game. Princess Maker 2. I never saw Princess Maker 1. Graphical game. Came out of Japan, I think. Certainly had Japanese manga sort of artwork to it. And you as a player were given this child, a girl, a little girl, to raise. And the basic basic gameplay was to make the princess attractive to the prince so that he would marry her. Now that was just one of the scenarios. You could suit her up, give her weapons, throw her into a forest. And that was one way to approach the whole thing. There was one where, you know, and depending on what kind of training you gave her and what kind of jobs you put her to, there was a reasonably large number of outcomes she could come to. One of them was that she was kind of a prostitute. One that she was a shop owner. And sometimes those were things that appealed to the prince. You know, there was a bit of randomness to the whole thing, to say. Not exactly sure what the prince is after in a wife. That's an interesting motif to say, if we could rig that. Yeah, it was one of the, I don't know if you call it a mini game, but as kind of the development portion of the game. Of course, you want it for either sex. Yeah, Princess Maker 2 was tended toward being very, just the whole set of it would totally offend the modern feminist. She would hate the game. So, there was a whole segment of the population that would kind of be turned off by it. So I think there was kind of a, with the traditional mods, it was kind of a voyeuristic thing. Those are just Christmas lights. I don't think that's a state patrolman at all. Anyway, so one would have to decide what kind of properties were useful to the game, to a certain kind of gameplay. To give people something to do. Something to talk about. Anyway, so that possibility. Anyway, so, I don't really want to turn up the speed on this, because I'm eating popcorn, I'm not really talking very fluidly. A lot of space in between while I munch on popcorn. But I think I'll stop right here, because there's only so much popcorn you can eat before your stomach's just full of the stuff. Of course, the funny thing is, a stomach full of popcorn is a stomach full of not much. Okay. So yeah, just thinking about doing that. You know, I always have to think about, so what are you going to do, Nimro, when you retire? To stay busy. And you know, you can go, well, maybe I'll write. Go, well, writing is an interesting and a good pursuit. This is kind of an offshoot of writing. Certainly look at it more like a creative process. It's got a little bit of screenwriting to it. Just as readily. Game design. Think of what kind of games you have. Integrate elements of different things, like the game of life could be integrated into it to a certain extent. Almost, there's, in all of them, there's almost a kind of the sim game. Sort of feel to it, although most of these games try to have these elements of a beginning and an end, where a sim game really doesn't. You know, you can keep playing it for years and still got the same, quite how to say it. Still look the same. I mean, you you may ultimately have a lot of money and a lot of possessions, which is what Sims is kind of about. But, you know, if you want people to keep coming back, you've got to have two or three things for them to do, and it'd be great if two of those three things were things that you could never stop doing. Conquering monsters, stuff like that. Going into an arena, fighting with each other. Which is kind of a mud thing. Oh, the game I believe was called Rogue back in the day. And those are games where you would go into... This was all done on the terminal. This wasn't too graphical. Although I think there, you know, a whole lot of these things were precursors to I don't know what to call them now. The graphic 3D virtual world stuff. There used to be something called Second Life that a lot of people played. That was in the, I don't know, 2000s. In the 2000s, Second Life existed. It's still there, I think, but it lost its popularity. For a while there, it was what everybody did, and the guys who did it were making money hand over fist. They were getting so rich. And then all of a sudden, social media started, and it was a lot simpler. You know, a whole lot of people didn't like Second Life because if you want to do anything really interesting, you had to spend a lot of money, and you had to... kind of know what you were doing. I think Minecraft has leapt into that space. I think it was really probably the follow-up to Second Life. It was kind of a Minecraft-y sort of thing. Now there's this thing, you know, Zuckerberg from Facebook is now wanting to change the whole thing and turn it into something called Metaverse. And a lot of people have said, wait a minute, it sure sounds like Second Life to us. I don't really know yet, but it's supposed to be kind of 3D-ish. He thinks that's the big thing. Virtual reality with goggles. I think he's interested in going in that direction. We'll see. And all these things kind of have their roots in these text-based adventure games. Back in the days when it was just a terminal. And you typed in what was close to natural English. Reasonably close to natural English. So that you can interact with other, with objects whether they were programmed objects or other people. People control objects too. Anyway, so I'm thinking about doing that. Pen mush might be the way of doing it. Some of them used a game engine that was written in what's called multi-user Forth. Forth is an interesting language. I've been intrigued by it. Used it a lot when I was much younger, before I had kids, when I had some time. Might get back to it again. But this is kind of fun because it actually produces something where Forth itself really was kind of an interesting, it's something that really wanted to be the replacement for assembly language. For a computer, a microprocessor. And always been very niche. Never really caught on, which is sad, because it really is. Actually, it's probably the best supported niche language in the universe. Almost every single microprocessor in existence somebody has wrote the fourth programming language for it, so you can develop with it. It's really low level, but not. It doesn't have to be. It really ends up being, you can get down to the guts if you want to very easily, but it really cries out for you to kind of build up a vocabulary. And based on this vocabulary, you kind of, you know, you piece things together. It is unlike any other motif there is. And it's built on stacks, and most microprocessors today have at least one stack. There's Forth that use two stacks or three stacks or however many you really want to use to accomplish what you want to do. And it's a real concise, straightforward way to accomplish a ton of stuff. If you're trying to minimize for size, Forth is fantastic. You know, it isn't going to be like machine language, for Pete's sakes. That's always the best. But nobody programs a machine language particularly anymore. Very few people did when microprocessors first came onto the scene in the 70s. The early 70s. So, anyway, there are mush programs that use it's called MUF, multi-user for it, and that's their programming language embedded of choice. I gotta find some of those. I think there's a fuzzy mush that uses that, built for people who are kind of into the furry sort of, it's kind of a lifestyle. Take on the persona of animals or stuff like that. And, it's its own interesting little subculture. I think it appeals a lot to people who aren't very, aren't very confident in their own skin. And there's plenty of those people, you know that. But these are people who say, fine, you know, since they kind of put on a different skin. And do it that way. Apparently it's got its own sexuality. It's another option for people who think they just weren't born in the right place, age, skin, gender, whatever, that they can explore and interact with other people using different, you know, using different methods, techniques, I don't know. Anyway, it makes it so the people that really probably aren't going to be very successful in regular social interactions and things like that, they can get involved with other things. They can engage with each other in different ways. If their looks are bad, it doesn't matter. You know, you're practically wearing an animal costume. And they don't see you as such. They interface with the animal skin that you've created. Costume. It gives a new social life to people who might not have had a very promising social life otherwise. So it's got some interesting aspects to it. Some people think it's really strange. Some people think it's perverse. And that's kind of what subcultures kind of end up kind of being. You know. So anyway, there was one that was kind of let people play out certain kind of furry fantasies as a text thing. And it took one of the, they forked one of the mud, mush, mucks engines, and repurposed it for that kind of interaction. Not really much of a gaming aspect to it. Some of them were early. Instead of muds, they were called talkies, and it was mostly social interaction. It really was the precursor to, in some way, to social media. It was just people taking on personas that were really easy to make because all it was text, a text description of you. And you would interface on that thing, you know. Some people would, quote, cross-dress. You know, they would play a female persona. I just found out that I don't know if it was John C. Dvorak or somebody that he was talking about, said that they always played female characters. And in kind of the tech world of the past, where so many people were guys, girls really got a lot of attention. And you can look at the VBS documentary. I think that's available on the Internet Archive. And there was this one where it's like, there was this woman and she said it was wonderful. There was this one girl that was really, that was deaf, and a bulletin board system was really fantastic for her. It didn't matter that she was deaf. It did not affect her interactions. So she loved the VBS because the way it naturally filtered how people perceived each other and how people interacted, it kind of put her on the same standing. And she really liked that. And social media can do that to a certain extent, although now it's quite a bit more, you don't have an avatar, you're just you. And there's other social media platforms that do that now too. Typed way of doing it. Audio podcasts are fantastic. One of the ones that I enjoyed listening to for a long time was called Roar. Came from this guy who lived in Newfoundland, way in the Maritimes of now of Canada. Anyway. And he had a great voice. He worked radio somewhat, but he was blind. And to just listen to him talk, you wouldn't know that. You wouldn't know that. Anyway, so that was one of the things that these things kind of appealed to, were people who wanted to be a part of a fantasy. And really appealed to people who, for one reason or another, didn't have many social prospects. The flesh world, for lack of a better term for it, and give them the opportunity to have these kind of interactions with other things. Sad part was sometimes these were, you know, just like anything else, there was chances to get taken advantage of. You know, you could have real live feelings for different people, and then you'd find out that they were nothing of the kind. You know, somebody who was touting themselves as an 18-year-old girl, you know, and you start kind of, you know, and they start having interactions, and you go, wow, I really like this girl. And then you find out that it's a 58-year-old man. And how do you deal with that? And I think to a large extent that was part of what made these things kind of fall apart, was the fact that these were also fantastic grooming places for all kinds of twisted things. You know, and people, unsuspecting people, would really get into this. You know, this is really kind of a chat room writ large. And anyway, so some really bad things could happen rather readily. And it was really quite difficult to keep those things from happening. Because all you ended up being was kind of a username and a password. And if somebody said, you're getting sick, you're a gross pervert, and we don't want to have these kind of people around, your kind of people around here, and you told them to get lost, you block that thing, they could just sign in as a new user with a new username and a new password, and they could start the thing all over again. Really kind of tough, especially from the standpoint that a lot of this social interaction stuff really appeals to women a lot. And so this was really a lot of women's first foray into technology, was in doing these things, because it's like, well, this is kind of cool. You know, and the girls, if they wanted to, they could hide the fact that they were girls. You know, the feminists love taking on a male persona and going out and really, really, you know, breaking some balls. That's what you could do. You know, something that you could do face to face in the flesh. Because people can just look at you and say, well, you're this. I can see all kinds of things about you. And these kind of situations could hide those things. Now, at a certain level, says, you know, I think there's a whole lot of things and protections in place now that there weren't back in the past for the person that's running the site not to be held responsible for what people use the platform for. Now that might be going away for the whole fact of I think it's called Section 230. I don't know what it's a section of particularly. But if they decide to get rid of Section 230, all of a sudden, you know, places like Facebook would be responsible for your activities. And they're supposed to be monitoring all this and making sure that people aren't doing sick, gross things or aren't taking advantage of people. It sounds really wonderful, but the logistics of it's horrible. There would have to be so much monitoring. There have to be so many people. They've tried to do it with the algorithms lately to try to cut down on stuff, but people learn quickly either how to beat the algorithm, or the algorithm keeps swatting them. They just decide to go away. I think more people have left Facebook over having some algorithm basically kick them out of Facebook for using language that Facebook says, well, that's unacceptable. And the funny thing is as people try to get around that algorithm by using euphemisms, you know, right now the big thing is people who don't like Joe Biden has started using the phrase, "Let's go, Brandon." And there are things like that, too. And it's difficult for an algorithm to legitimately say, oh, that's hate speech, because, you know, even in the instance that it was going, there was a little news reporter, a news reporter that was interviewing some NASCAR driver, and his name was Brandon. And that lady said, oh, do you listen, do you hear that chanting? And she thought they were chanting, let's go, Brandon, when they were actually chanting, F you, Joe Biden. And you're going, how did she get that from that? But it kind of stuck. In a lot of sporting events, there's a whole lot of chanting against Joe Biden, who's currently the President of the United States, going on. And in places where they've found a way to kind of screen that out, either by algorithm or some other way, people have gone to saying, let's go, Brandon. And, you know, because this news reporter thought that was what people were saying, and they weren't. But it's like, well, okay, I guess it became a thing. And let's go, Brandon, is actually a derogatory phrase in reference to Joe Biden. Go figure. Which just means one thing. It says people will find ways to get around any kind of censorship. Everybody's afraid of 1984, and you go, you know, to a certain extent, you don't have to worry about that, because almost every single way that they can try to get you to do what they want and to say the things that they want you to say and to be the people that they want you to be, there's ways to get around it. And not easy ways to combat at all. You know how many Brandons there are in this world? So you can't really do it based on Brandon and let's and go. You can find those everywhere. It's usually a positive affirmation for somebody. Let's go. So, yeah. So, I have a whole lot of faith in the creativity of the world. Just basically getting around that stuff. Amazing. So, yeah, see, and that's why that when I start these mushes, this pen mush or something, I start working on it, I can almost immediately talk myself out of it by saying, you know, I can't just let people in here. They're going to do something, and I'm going to be held responsible for it. That's why a lot of things like this have died, because they simply, you know, they said my place got taken over by people passing messages to each other. For all I know, they're terrorists, and I don't want to be supporting terrorism. And you go, okay, well then there's that. What are you going to do? If they're speaking in language or in a code that you don't get, how are you going to know what's going on? Except to say, when I see anybody talking non-English or saying things that don't make sense, or building private objects that they're trying to hide from me, you know, you stop them? Like, well, okay. I guess that's what you need to do. But you don't want to spend, I mean, you would like to spend your time creating new interesting things for people to come to do. You don't want to spend the bulk of your time monitoring interactions between different characters to try to see if they're doing something nefarious. Using your platform as a messaging stored forward, which is, you know, half the time I end up just saying, you know, nope, I put up my stuff, I put it there, people can get to it, that's all I'm going to do. I don't want them talking to each other. And as soon as you take away the chat ability, then they start creating objects with messages in them. And that's how they pass messages back and forth. And it's, you know, and you're going, well, how do I stop that? And you go, well, then you just kind of freeze the game so it's no fun for anybody. You know, it really is emblematic of society that one or two entities, or three or four, a very small number, can get together and totally ruin something. Make something that was once useful or enjoyable or nice. A lot of these mushes were run by universities. They were used by college professors and stuff like that to interact with students in their classes. But all of a sudden, that didn't work anymore because it was too difficult to enforce rules and standards and stuff like that, so a whole lot of that stuff was just almost completely eliminated. You know, it was what I got into trouble for. I was teaching school at San Jose Schools. I did so for 1 year, and one of the things I did was I showed kids, eighth graders, the worst kids, you know, really the worst age is about 14 and 15. Showed them how to use a wiki, which is a place where you can go on and you can create pages and other people create pages and you know, it's all imminently editable. You don't even have to announce yourself or who you are. It could just be edited. And it was, an interesting social experiment when WikiWiki happened in the first place. And the one that I put together for our school, it got me into trouble. You can't allow kids that much autonomy and ability to be anonymous. And yeah, I think that was part and parcel of them saying, well, you just don't understand what it's like to be a school teacher and what's required. And it was. I wasn't the school teacher, that's for sure. So yeah, chances are I was out. I was out, you know, it was that simple. Schools aren't about those things, and that's right. They're not about those things. You know, teacher runs the class. That's great. You know, and they're there to benevolently give out information and work to do to help kids be competent. It says, and like I said, I'm not speaking against the motif of school. That's how it's designed. That's how it works. If you don't like it, don't go to school, you know. If you want to homeschool, homeschool. If you want to unschool, unschool. It's fantastic. So, yeah, I'm sitting here, and it's almost like, well, I think I was going to do this pen thing. And it's like, no, no, you're not. No, you're not going to do it. Why? Because it's going to... You don't want to have to sit there and monitor it all the time. It's just not an interesting thing. And it's too easily used by groups that you really don't want to have anything to... You don't want to mess with them. The only time where you can feel it's really safe is if only a few people actually use it. And then it's like, well, then what's the point of it? And I guess that's always what I would come back to is what's the point? Why waste the time? Why spend the time creating something that nobody is ever really going to look at? So it's almost tempting to kind of say, well, why don't you just do kind of a write your own adventure story book? You know, those books that, you know, they would say, if you want this person to sit down in the chair, turn to page 389 and go from there. And it might bring you back to another place. And you can easily do these things on a very simple level with regular HTML. And you go, you know, why don't you just do it that way? You don't have to... you don't have to do it any other way. So, anyway. Might just go back to doing something like that. It's very much more guided. There's, you know, you almost don't want interaction between people going through it because they're always at different places, and what good is it to let these people talk to each other? Let them do it as a solo opportunity. So that might be a thing to do. Not doing it as a group thing. Of course, the problem is the functionality is there, so you almost have to rewire it so it doesn't do it like that. Interesting algorithm to how to do that. Still keep track of people and what they're doing. So I might do something akin to it without all the other stuff. There's no interaction, really. Or if you do have interaction, it's only in gameplay. You know, not in any other way. So, I don't know. Cookies. People used to be really afraid of cookies. And now it's just kind of a thing that people just have to click on a thing that accepts the fact that they're going to do cookies. If you don't do cookies, there's certain functionality you can't have. Giving people the choice, I suppose. Anyway, so, yeah, I might come up with something akin to that. Trying to get away from these trucks. I'll be glad when I get off this interstate. But the interstate's nice because you can get to places a little faster. On a Sunday night, that's kind of what I'm after. Jeez, man. You're kind of in my lane, dude. Look at that. He's right in the middle of the freaking lane. He's trying to get away from this thing. Sort of. But not really. Guy. That's a scary truck driver right there. Well, I'm going to get away from this guy soon enough. I see Moriarty up here. So yeah, that would probably be simpler. You wouldn't have to play games about what's what and who's who. There was something called the Scum VM engine. And there were games to play. It was kind of like adventure games. But it was far more constrained. It would give you like 3 different options of something to do. I remember there was one for Indiana Jones. And it was never very appealing to me because it was really kind of dumb. There was only really one choice that really did anything. The loop back based on other choices was really quite it was really tiny. You could do something, but then you just wouldn't get the information you needed out of another character. You'd have to give the right answer, and there was only 3 answers, and the 2 answers would just leave you sitting there and the person kind of tapping their foot, saying, just tapping their foot, waiting for you to give them the right response. And you would go through the 3, and it would be the right response at the 3rd one. And you go, oh, all right. It could take you in different directions, surely. And it was graphical. It ran kind of like that Make Your Own Adventure book. It was close to that. You would have elements of a lot of things, I think. But yeah, you would kind of attach it with cookies. So the people themselves would hang on to the cookies. I don't know how you'd do it because it's usually only 1 cookie per site. I need to kind of think about whether you could do different cookies for the same site for different people. There's also a way of doing it without any cookies at all, where you just go to a different page, and it renders kind of like pages, but it's not. It's more like a it's more like a marker that tells who you are, and it really doesn't, you know, the whole thing is don't store any information about anybody. Don't do it. And in that URL would be coded the information enough to say who you were and, you know, probably just a who you were and what was basically your situation. So you wouldn't want to base things on any kind of particular inventory. People would just have to, you know, it'd be a story. You don't have to give it, you don't have to give it your name. You're not really a participant as such. You're just guiding where the story is going to go. And you give it a little bit of the story and you go, what goes next? And hopefully it goes somewhere. You know, you try to make it so it's more expansive. So you give each scenario on it. You keep expanding the possibilities from the scenario standpoint. So something like that's kind of doable. It'd be really nice if it was something where you could edit it online. That would be great. Of course, that's kind of... I'm fine with doing it in raw HTML, sending people off somewhere else. Versus the whole thing of where, oh, you just go do this and... put in this URL and, you know, make this selection or that selection and you win a game. And you go, well, you don't really want it to behave like that. You really want people to want to walk through the adventure, you know. It's less of a game and more parallel narratives going on. I don't know how interesting that would be for people, except that a whole lot of people just want a little snippet, you know. When you're presented with a book, there's a lot of people who just frown at books because they say, well, I don't want to invest that much time. Or whatever, or I just don't like reading things that are that big, you know. Time, what is TLDR is really about giving people just little snippets. And people prefer things in little snippets, so you kind of... you kind of market toward that approach to things. So that might be an interesting way to go and pursue this. It's just to build up a website that takes people places. It isn't that you gotta keep it kind of staticky, so that people can approach it. You know? Still kind of text-based. But you know, when you got HTML, you can stick pictures in there. You can do art if you want to. I don't really do much art. Flashing me, it's like, hey man, I'm doing like 72. That's below 75. Just in case you've got kind of a sense for that. Okay. Anyway, so that's kind of what I'm looking at. Moriarty's got pretty good gas prices. Not as good as the $2.99 that I got at someplace else. But hey, it's going down. The pilot station says $3.12. There's a good chance I can go to my 7-Eleven and get it even cheaper. Awesome. So yeah, that's kind of a thing between, and a little more engaging than just the story. Might be interesting. And there might be other ways of getting to, you know, basically the same location, just looking at it a different way. It's just a different web page. You can always back up. Nothing to stop you from going backwards. And it just ends up being a big universe of discovery. And, you know, that's fun. That's interesting. Now that sounds like something I'm willing to do. Let's go down here and see if we can get some gas. And I probably need to just turn off this recording. It's gone long enough. Put it up on the wiki later. I finally got Podcast Addict back on. I had to pretty much shut down Google Chrome, but I don't care because I'm not really doing Google Chrome. Ooh, 305. Yes, good price, man. I'm taking it. And there's never anybody here. I always wondered why, with this low of price, why this place is always empty. Well, it doesn't matter. Oops, I'm on the wrong side. Okay, it's time for me to finish this. All right, here we go. And that's it. Have a great day, guys.